It's still on day.
Good morning, everyone.
Yeah.
Great fall day. I just drove in and got back from a convention where we had a couple motivational, inspirational speakers, and so I'm still kind of full of it. And the fall is here, and it's seen up my way a little bit of color. So, good morning to everyone and to our faculty and staff that are here this morning. Welcome, and again, let us say to you, thank you for all you do. It's much appreciated and well-deserved. Thank you very much. That being said, I'll call the meeting to order and ask, we don't take roll on committee, do we?
We do not.
No.
Okay, so our first order of business is oath of office for Mr. J. Todd Richard. Can you join me up front, sir?
Sure.
You want Mom up, too?
Sure, if she'd like
to. All right,
Mom.
Got to have some way to put you on the spot. Is that good?
Yeah, you're great.
Could you raise your right hand? You solemnly swear that you will support the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of the Commonwealth and be faithful and true to the Commonwealth of Kentucky so long as you continue a citizen thereof, and that you will faithfully execute to the best of your ability the office of member of the Board of Regents of Western Kentucky University according to law. And do you solemnly swear that since the adoption of the present Constitution, you being a citizen of the state, have not fought a duel with deadly weapons within the state, without it, nor have you sent or accepted a challenge by a duel with deadly weapons, nor have you acted as second in carrying a challenge, nor aided or assisted any person thus offending. So help you God.
So help me God.
Congratulations. Welcome aboard.
Thank you.
Don't go anywhere, Mom. You haven't met Laurie. This is Laurie. She looks like a sophomore, but she's really his mother. Congratulations, you're going to have an opportunity to switch pens here because one of our traditions is that each individual who becomes a member of this Board of Regents has the opportunity to receive the Board of Regents, symbolizing the reign of the U.S.A.U.
Mr. President, you had a space for some special recognition or comments.
Well, I do. I have several things that I was going to share, but I'll send some material out to the board on some recent rankings that have come out in the last few weeks that are interesting. They cover a wide range of topics, but I'll save that for another time. What I do want to do, however, is circulate this around. Many of you are interested in history. I know several of you collect things. This is the actual diploma given to Douglas Keene, as in Douglas Keene Hall on our campus, in 1921 from Ogden College. Free merger, Provost Lee. So this is, is Cheryl Stevens here? I don't see Cheryl, who's dean of Ogden College at this point. This is obviously the forerunner to our current Ogden College of Science and Engineering. But it's a fascinating, and this was given to me this week by Ray Buckberry, who many of you know in Bowling Green is quite a historian himself. So pretty cool, the original diploma from Douglas Keene, 1921, June 24th, 1921. So that's his actual degree, and I'm not exactly sure when the merger occurred, but it was shortly after this, when Ogden College merged with the institution at that point, so... Send that around, and Jay Todd, when it gets to you, if you'll bring it on around. Thought you all might have interest in seeing that, a little bit of history, and that will find a proper place, perhaps on campus, but certainly eventually in the archives of the Kentucky Museum. That's it?
That's it?
Yep.
Gee, that's short. Before we start the committee meetings, we normally do this, but just as a reminder, I'll ask our committee chairs if they will acknowledge their members of each committee before we before they take up action for the benefit of our guests and others today. Sometimes they are a little at a loss of how our committee system works and our processes. So that being said, we'll call on the Finance Committee. And Mr. Regent Johnson, if you would, when you get to your information items, if you are so inclined, if you comment on the update on our on your task for faculty compensation, staff compensation.
Okay, if you don't mind, I'll say that at the end of that.
Yes,
okay. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee are myself, Regent Ridley, Regent Porter, Regent Burch, and Regent Selke. Myself, Regent Ridley, Regent Porter, and Regent Burgeon are present here today. Mr. Selke is absent. We have a quorum so we can conduct business. We have a number of items, and I'm actually going to turn it over to Ann Mead, but the two items for your reference will be personnel actions, which will appear on pages F1 through 20 of your handout, and staff, which will appear on pages S1 through 15. So, Ann, if you want to address any of those.
So you have one action item and several information items. The personnel items for you today to approve include the regular salary adjustments that you would anticipate and the one-time compensation payments. Your agenda item indicates the dates and the ranges of those personnel actions. Administrative Council is prepared to answer any questions, and as we have done in the past, increases greater than 5,000 include a short narrative with the justification for the increases. Anyone has any questions?
Any questions from anyone? Members of the committee? Any members of the board? I will then entertain a motion for approval.
So moved.
Regent Ridley is moved. Is there a second?
Second.
Regent Burch is seconded. Any discussion? Questions? If not, I'll call for a vote. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carries. The rest are informational items. There'll be one informational item that does not appear on the agenda, which Ann will address toward the end. Is that fair enough, Ann?
Yes.
So I'll turn informational items over to you and to Jennifer.
Yeah, the first one is our quarterly internal audit report, several reports and a couple of reviews. And, you know, Jennifer Miller, our Director of Internal Audit, will handle these items.
I've decided that I feel like I must be having a ton of fun because time's flying by. I feel like I was just up here in June. But I can tell you what we've been doing for this quarter. So we'll look at the normal things, the complete projects, the projects in progress currently, and then we'll do a high-level overview of any of the action items that we have follow-up. From any of the reports that have been issued. So this graph is just representing actual hours versus budget hours for the project that we completed. And I normally don't do a graph, but I thought this would be more fun to look at, I guess, if you can make that fun. But the blue is the budget hours, and the green is the actual. So you can kind of see where we're at with the projects that we've completed. And the first three, the PCI assessment, the information security assessment, and the negated bonding were all made by Grant Thornton. And then the president's team, that's dedicated internal audit, and special license plate reconciliation is also dedicated internal audit. And I'll I'm going to point out, use my little pointer. I will take full responsibility for this one being over. I think when we put that on the audit plan originally, I did not account for myself doing any work on that. So they hit their target, and I'm the problem here. So I did some of the meetings and some of the review of the report. So that's why that one is over. The PCIs, I think it's over by 6 hours possibly, and this is overall Grant Thornton and internal audit together. So the PCI assessment, the InfoSec assessment, and the debt and bonding will be talked about by Grant Thornton. We have a guest here today, so I'm going to run through this pretty quickly so we can get to him. So the President's TNA, that's the one that we do every year. It's mandatory. And we took a different approach this year. I don't know if you know about the past approach, but it was basically just to randomly select 3 to 4 months out of the year, and we looked at every transaction on those pro cards. And this is 2 pro cards. It's the individual card and the department card. So this year we did it a little different. We actually pulled every transaction for the year for both cards and did a random selection, including some high-dollar transactions that took place. And we were able to get a better coverage on what we were auditing. With that, just like last year, there were some minor violations, and that's sales tax and gratuity, most of those, and there weren't that many. So we just had a recommendation that all the cardholders that use the department card, plus Dr. Ransdell, to be made aware of the policy that we had out there, and the record keeper sent a very nice email informing the card users of those policies. Fact that there were some minor violations on the report for this year. She actually did that. That was the recommendation, and she was able to do that before we actually issued the report, so it is officially closed at this point. Do you have any questions about that one or about the process? I just wanted to do that differently this year so we could get a better coverage on some of those transactions that we could look at. Also in this quarter, we've been planning and executing some of those projects that are part of the audit plan. So these are all the planned projects. Lab safety EPA compliance audit is going on right now. Utility billings management is a review, and we're currently doing that process as well. University Pathway Program Royalties audit, that's actually from prior year audit plan, and it's rolled over into this year. It's more of a concern on whether we're getting enough data to do that audit, but it's coming along, so I'm hoping that will be something we can talk about this quarter. Change fund monitoring, that's one that I put on the audit plan. It's a continuous project. The change fund is kind of like a petty cash fund, which I talked about last time. But we're doing surprise counts all over campus for those change funds that are out in different areas and different departments, and talking about the process of how those custodians reconcile their change fund, how they report anything that's different. So we're kind of gathering all of that information, and that'll be in one big report, possibly at the end of the year or before. I'm not sure how that's going to fall out, but it'll be one big report. We'll have recommendations on that as well. And the other thing that I didn't put up here, we're kind of just getting into the instrument card analysis, where I put that as a continuous monitoring project also on the audit plan. We're starting to look at that and try to figure out how we want to go about looking at more larger span of ProCard transactions for the whole campus. The one that's just in the planning stage, and it's very pre-planning stage right now, is the WKU police overtime analysis. I can't tell you a lot about that right now. We've had one meeting, and that'll be hopefully coming up for next quarter as well. And this is the last thing that we'll talk about, just very high level. The action items are basically a follow-up procedure that we do for any recommendation that was put on an audit report, not a management review, but just the audit reports. Those are the ones that we require administrative responses. And we have target dates for those to be completed, and we have their action plans. So we're trying to keep a log of all of those. And I've mentioned, I think campus emergency preparedness has been on here for a long time, but that's because of the what we're dealing with, and that's the IWKU app that they're trying to reformat, and then the VoIP phone system that I think is going throughout campus. So those two things will be on there for at least, I would say, another 6 months, but we are trying to keep updated on that with our environmental health and safety director, who's kind of like the lead for that one. The PCI assessment, that had 9 action plans, and currently there are some things that have been started, and we'll get into that a little more when our guest speaks about the PCI assessment. And the IT security assessment, there were about 5 recommendations for that one. And currently there are 2 that are still pending. 3 of those have been closed. And then the one that I mentioned earlier is the President's TNA, which it was closed. That's really all I had. If anybody doesn't have any questions, I'd like to go ahead and introduce our guest. Anybody have any questions? Okay, our guest is Grant, well, he's not Grant Thornton, he is from Grant Thornton.
Which is
yeah. This is Jim Colbreth. He's the director with Grant Thornton out of Raleigh, North Carolina, and he was the lead on the PCI, the information security, and the debt and bonding, so I'll turn it over to him.
Thanks, Jennifer. Good morning, everyone. I've my time in Bowling Green, which hasn't been long. A beautiful campus we have. My first time here. So to get started, Jennifer kind of covered the hours overall for the projects. We performed 3 audits over the past few months. One thing to note here is on these two, we kind of made the early decision to flip the hours between the two because some of the information security work we were doing was doing the PCI assessment. So that's why we were doing the novel there. But moving on into the audits, the first one is the debt and bonding review. So the scope of this audit was to look at current processes around engaging in debt, long-term debt, looking at it from a policy standpoint, from a process standpoint, comparing it with other universities, benchmarking universities, as well as other universities in the state, and then coming up with recommendations based on what we saw. So initially, there's a draft debt management policy out of the Finance Administration. And our recommendation is to go ahead and implement that policy as it stands. We do have some further recommendations along with that. But policy, decent policy, and definitely should be presented for implementation. Along with that, recommend that there be a debt management advisory committee formed. And it's my understanding that that committee has been formed.
It has been. As of September 4th, there's been a debt advisory committee established with the members are Ann Mead, Jim Cummings, our chief financial officer, Dr. Katz, the dean of Gordon Ford College of Business, Mr. Brian Cooster, the director of Housing and Residence Life, and Dr. Eric Reed, the at-large member. He's part of the University Senate and a professor of the Department of History. So that was established on September 4th.
Thanks, Jennifer. So part of my recommendation is that you be charged with monitoring debt capacity, monitoring reserves, security measures, as well as general policy making and overall governance. Along with that, part of the committee is part of the policy, being part of the policy. And some updates to the policy I think that need to be included. One, smaller purchases. We think there needs to be a lease versus analysis for those. Formalized, that should go to the committee for review, and then ultimately those transactions should be approved prior to entry into those obligations. Within our report, there's another observations page that has a laundry list of smaller updates that we think should be included within the policy. So maybe these are some of the larger things that we saw from our review. Any questions on this audit? Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Does this, in effect, establish the Debt Management Advisory Committee as the screening body for determining what's appropriate in terms of capacity, what's appropriate in terms of obligations? How does that relate to the board's role?
So our recommendation here is one, formation of a policy,
okay,
and then two, formation of that committee, and that committee would then be
the recommending body to the board.
And recommend it to the board. Am I correct with that, Anne?
Yeah, Dr. Birch, what we have done is set up the committee to be advisory to the president and anticipate that that will generate a report through the financial budget funding as necessary. The Debt Management Advisory Committee did meet yesterday, and we've laid out some direction. With, again, our first priority is to get that debt management policy ready for approval. We want to review Grant Thornton's suggested amendments to it, and we're going to take a few weeks looking at some other institutions' policies just to ensure that we think it's comprehensive. Obviously, any policy can be revised as we move forward with it, but we're going to spend a few weeks getting that policy ready.
John?
Is there any reason why it's all contained with employees of the university and not someone outside the university, such as a board member that is on that board?
I think we had some discussion about whether it ought to be administration or committee of the board. Based on the bylaws, it really is embedded into the responsibilities of the finance and budget committee. So, but we wouldn't expect the finance and budget committee to be monitoring on a regular basis and making these decisions and meeting with us. So I think that everything that would be of real significance to the board will in fact come through this working group and back to the board.
So my question then would be, is this committee reporting directly to the president, or are they reporting to the chairman and the finance committee?
As structured through the president.
It's an internal group that includes administration and a faculty representative and the people on our campus that are most engaged with that, like the Student Life Foundation. So it would be advisory to me, and then I'll report, as would be our board practice and policy, to the board on debt-related matters.
But we can't issue, there's no approval to enter into long-term debt unless it comes through board.
Or leases.
The leases are a little different. We're going to have to review those. For example, when the nursing program moved into the new building, they needed furniture and equipment, and they entered into a lease purchase agreement for those. And what we want to be able to do is to come back and say through the advisory committee before a division makes that, we have empowered the division head to make that decision. It's not really a long-term, that one may have been 6 or 7 years. It's not really long-term debt, but I believe that's an example of where we would like to, before they proceed with a lease purchase, that we make a decision about whether that's the most effective way.
One other comment.
Go ahead, take whatever time you want.
Then that will all be spelled out in the future debt management policy,
yes,
that is to be established through this committee.
We're going to make sure that we add that as to as an appropriate step in before obligating the institution to a lease office.
I sent recently a list of all of our leases, large and small, to the board a few weeks ago, and just like we were required to have state authorization for leases over 200,000 property leases, there will be a debt management policy for board authorization of a certain amount, but we have hundreds of leases, most of them small, that would be administrative responsibility, but the debt management policy established by this committee will recommend what those levels should be to come to the board.
Mr. Chairman.
Reporter, do you have any questions?
I have none.
I've got just a couple of questions. More mechanical than anything else. I'm looking at the Debt Management Advisory Committee and the what appears to be the five areas that you had suggested that fall within their jurisdiction. Could we add to that continuing disclosure compliance as part of that? Jennifer and I and Ann discussed that. One of the reasons why I'm asking that question is continuing compliance, as Jim will tell you, is becoming more important every day, and certainly is very important in terms of the official statements that we send out when we do debt refunding or otherwise. Could we add that to the area to ensure that continuing, Jim, that may be out more towards you or Anna.
Add that to their responsibility.
And my last point is that on the written debt management policy, did I hear correctly to Regent Ridley's question that policy is currently being drafted and then will be disseminated to the board?
Yes.
Okay. I thought I heard that, but I wasn't. Does anybody else have any questions on this before we go to the next one? Go right ahead.
Thank you. One thing to note on this one, this audit wasn't that. So within our reports, there are not management responses. And the other one is the next two we'll discuss management responses. Moving on to the IT side of the job. Information security side. So this audit is basically looking at the foundations of cybersecurity. What are those building blocks beneath the whole cybersecurity? What IT governance policies and practices in place for the information security process. And then once again, looking at those versus benchmarking universities, as well as identifying exposures if you need those. And then this audit, we have four recommendations. The first one is around a little more formalization. Change management process. We found a couple of areas where there's potential exposure in change management. And for the group, change management is if there's a change to the code of a computer system or to the computer. And ultimately, we don't want your developers being able to bring those changes for these high-risk systems. Right? Part of this recommendation is, one, some policy updates to true these things up. Implementing a unified ranking and tracking mechanism. So within the IT spectrum of KDKU, there are various levels, various risk levels of changes. So part of this is a ranking system to make sure that we're tracking the change management. Changes to the banner system would be more critical than changes to subsidiary systems, right? Along with that, making sure that we're capturing the changes and logging those systematically so we can know what the changes are to the systems. And then adequate segregation of duties. As I alluded to earlier, that's basically making sure there's segregation between development, testing, and promotion of these changes. From a management response standpoint, management agrees with that, and Gordon and his team have implemented or are working to implement some responses to address all of these. Phased approach, and once again, utilizing that ranking approach so that not every change has to go through strict change management process. Target date on that is, I don't know.
We're going to have that in place by January 1 for sure. We're going to actually have it in place before that.
That's
the change management process.
The January 1 date's on this, yes. Yeah.
Thank you. Next one is around password parameters. These were some admin passwords for the banner system. I'm talking with Gordon today. That's already been addressed, so that this is in there. Next one is around automated job map monitoring. And basically, we're monitoring jobs. We're monitoring these automated jobs. It's just the fact if there's an event with one of these jobs, it's the documentation around that. What was the event? When it occurred? What was the resolution? And part of that is just tracking and ensuring that they're picking up on recurring issues so that they can be addressed. Recurring exposures. Once again, management agreed with the recommendation there, and they have a target date of October 2015 to get that in. And then last one is not that there aren't IT policies, there are IT policies. It's just a periodic review and refresh of those policies to make sure they're addressing current processes in place. Once again, they agree with that. I believe January 1 was the date to have that process in place. Any questions on information security?
Go ahead.
Did you do actual penetration testing?
The firm does do that, but you guys have another group that does penetration testing, right?
Did you review those reports or record?
We did review those reports.
Were there any incidences or concerns?
I did not review those reports personally, but none were noted.
We don't have any confirmed penetration test violations at all over the last. We do have constant penetration attempts on this network. We don't have any confirmed penetrations of our network. So we constantly monitor that. We have another outside firm that comes in and does some penetration testing periodically. That's a good question, and that's a constant concern. It actually keeps me awake a lot more than this. But
how, a broader question, how does internal audit, absent this process, how would it monitor incidences of attempted penetration or successful penetration and getting that information to the outside of IT to other sources?
I think that's outside of my scope of experience and expertise. That's a good question. I don't know the answer.
Well, I mean, we, of course, at least twice, every 2 years, we try to have some kind of InfoSec security audit by a firm like Grant Thornton. And the reason we bring in Grant Thornton is because it takes quite a bit of IT expertise to even be able to audit our kind of operation. So they come in at least once every 2 years, and they do this kind of review. Now, to be honest, their review is not total because our environment is very complex. I mean, change management is a IT enterprise-wide problem. Network layer, systems layer, application layer, software layer, end-user device layer. They came in and actually, in this particular instance,
We were interested in them looking at our systems that had sensitive data. The Banner system is the system in our environment that has the most sensitive data. So we wanted them to look at processes and security specifically around that system. And they did, and they also looked at some broader security issues on the whole network environment. But they were concentrating on change management and security issues specifically with the Banner sensitive data system. So that's what they were doing. In terms of a broader sort of a IT review, I mean, we periodically engage another firm to come in and do periodic penetration testing. And we're required to do penetration testing periodically related to our PCI compliance. So we do that. Am I totally comfortable with the level at which we're doing that? I'll never be comfortable with the level at which we're doing that. We can always do more. We can always do it more extensively. We can always, there's always room for improvement in that process. So, in terms of your question about, you know, who's watching us, I will say that since Jennifer's come here, your guy can't get away with anything. But, she is limited in her expertise in her office with regard to IT stuff. So that's why she hires Grant Thornton. We do these kinds of tests all the time. We try to communicate with Jennifer about what we're doing. You know, is there another watchdog above her that's watching IT and making sure we're not, you know, policing ourselves? We might talk about whether there's a way to improve that process, but it is something that we're constantly worried about, and we're constantly trying to improve that process. So your suggestion is, and the implication of it is actually interesting, because we probably could come up with a more formal process for us reporting to you in some fashion, sort of what the results of some of our internal testing are and the results of those outside firms. So it's probably more than you want to know.
I would just encourage that probably ought to be part of the IT policy is that if there is an incident, that it gets reported to someone outside of your department so that they're...
Well, within our policies, we have an incident reporting plan. An incident response plan. And that plan very specifically calls for us to take certain steps to report it. I mean, it involves getting a team together. If we have a suspected incident or a confirmed incident, we get everybody from public affairs involved for the media part of it. I mean, it's got a very strict sort of protocol for what we do if we suspect or confirm an incident. So that incident response plan has been in place a long time, and we constantly review it. And we're actually required by the state now, with this House Bill 5 that was passed about a year ago, to have a formal incident response plan. And so that is in place, and we do follow that if we need to. So.
Every Monday morning at our vice president's meetings, Gordon reports to the division heads on any accesses or any threats or any dynamics that the campus needs to know about in terms of IT protection, security, anything that is pertinent for the good of the whole. Gordon will report to that group such information on a regular basis.
Go ahead.
Do you feel that you're appropriately funded to stay software, otherwise state-of-the-art on your security protocols?
Ann and I are curious in this response, too.
I haven't answered this question.
We'll never be adequately funded. I mean, we could spend as much money as you could throw at me on it. But I do think I'm comfortable that we are doing as much as we can with the money we have. And it's not always a problem where you can throw money at it and fix it. So I'm in the process of coming up with funding projections and needs over the next 3 to 5 years. And IT security I would be recommending we have a bump in that. But I do have an IT security office specifically staffed that spends all their time looking at our IT security, you know, managing our firewalls and managing our account accesses and our provisioning. And there's two individuals in that job. Plus, we have some individuals on the network team that have a security responsibility. So the answer to your question is, I'm okay with the way we're funded right now. It's never enough, and I would welcome any money anybody wants to give me. I would use it wisely. But exactly what that number is, I'm working on.
Anything else?
No, sir.
Any other questions on this particular subject? Go ahead.
No other questions? We'll move on to DCI. DCI is payment card industry. Basically, you know, all these breaches for all these retailers. And that's where the formation from all of the card companies formed the PCI Security Standards Council. Try to make the organization as secure as possible against these breaches. So, what we did here from a scope standpoint is identify what the current scope is here at the university, including policies, procedures, what versions are, what those merger relationships are, what the acceptance channels are, the data flow, and data retention. All of that is important. We're talking about payment card information. Out of this, we had five recommendations. The first one is basically, once again, we keep recommending committees, but PCI compliance. And part of this is because the purser's office is doing some, IT's doing some, internal audit may be doing a little bit. This is kind of standardizing and helping policy making and governance. And
just recently, we've come up with all of the members of the committee. We have representatives from the Bursar's office, I believe network security, enterprise applications and programming, internal audit, and the parking and transportation group. So we are trying to determine our first meeting, which will probably be mid-October, to start figuring out policies and our responsibilities and start actually running through some of these other recommendations that are the responsibility of the committee.
That wasn't staged at all.
None of it is.
So once again, with this recommendation, management agrees, and as Jennifer alluded to, they're in the process. The next two recommendations kind of fall within that one, and that's maintaining that inventory of affiliated merchants, making sure we know who is processing credit card transactions within the university or within university, as well as governmental compliance standards for those merchants. The next one over there is change management and segregation of duties. And this is very honed in, very specific. And I apologize for my misspelling there. I realize that. So it is authorized.net, not authorized. Basically, this is a connection script for internally developed software to connect authorized.net. One person that manages that whole process. We recommend that change management segregation be applied to that to ensure. And then last but not least is compliance with the new standards, and this is the chip card standards. Making sure that devices are able to read the new chip cards so that we're meeting those PCI standards. Once again, that one takes a little bit of investment. I saw some statistics this morning, and I think United States wide is about $3.5 billion investment to upgrade to this new standard. But what do you have to do? Not just the university. That's why. I'm getting looks. Once again, management is in agreement with all these recommendations, that they have target dates set within their responses. is in the report. Any questions on PCI DSS?
Yeah.
May I direct a question to Jennifer?
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Jennifer, I heard you say the committee that was forming to be on the compliance committee,
mm-hmm.
and it seemed like it was very well represented of the university, but specifically I do know that there are ancillary services that are offered by the Alumni Association through vendors or merchants that would be classified, for example, a homecoming for some group on campus. That's one thing. You're familiar with those. At the athletic department for ticket sales, obviously, and then, of course, the foundations accept credit card contributions.
Mm-hmm.
So those three areas are pretty large volume, I would consider, of transactions. So are they represented in that group? Are they the enterprise services or...
No, they're currently not, and that's a good recommendation. This isn't in stone right now, so literally we just received someone volunteer for this committee yesterday. So we can talk about that and see who else would probably be a good asset to the committee.
I would venture to say outside of food services, those three areas are pretty large transactional
yes.
businesses that come from various areas.
Right.
So that might be something that you might consider.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions? Jennifer, I have one question on the PCI, and I don't know if it's to you or to you, but the PCI 3 standards. Where do our current vendors, such as in food services, stand with respect to compliance with that? And who might bear that financial responsibility?
Well, that's a good question, too. Steve Hoing, who is the director of this region, who's on campus, would probably be a better person to answer
sure.
that.
Okay.
For our standpoint, I know that we have been supplied those POS systems from BB&T, and I believe all of those have gone out to our respective merchants that are not third-party.
Such as WKU Store or something.
Right. Okay. Well, they have an actually totally different system, but they are in place. They went live with theirs earlier than what was required. But I do know that recently all of the other POS systems that come through from BB&T through the bursar's office have been distributed. All the training has been completed for those, for our merchants that are on campus
okay.
that are not third party.
Mr. Johnson, we are going to proceed with an amendment to the Aramark contract.
Oh, okay.
We've got it drafted. It'll happen shortly. That will require them to be PCI compliant. I don't know if they currently are. I haven't asked that question, but I do know that we will require it and execute an amendment.
Okay.
They are currently not, per an email from someone at their headquarters in their IT department. They are currently not PCI compliant for this campus, which is part of the report, and it's one of the recommendations that is in there. But it will be probably headed up by the PCI committee to get that in place, but also that PCI compliance language that would be part of the amendment to the contract would push them to be PCI compliant. The chip card reader, they have to do that whether or not we require them or not because of the industry standard. So,
thank you, Jim. Anyone else?
Thank you. I appreciate it. I appreciate the cooperation of the department for working with the three audits.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I guess our next item would be information item on GATSBY implementation. And GATSBY stands for Government Accounting Standards Board. And that's all I know.
I'm sitting here thinking that I can't figure out what we could add to the Finance and Budget Committee to make it any more exciting. So if you've got some suggestions, Mr. Chair, committee members, you know, our PowerPoints are stimulating, but I don't know what else to do but the material that I have. And the next one, I'm sure, will be stimulating as well. The GASB 68 was pronounced a few years ago, and we knew it was coming. We knew we would have to implement it. So what does it mean to us? It means that the Commonwealth of Kentucky's unfunded liability related to the retirement systems needs to be presented within our own financial statements, even though technically they are not our responsibility to fund. We chose to bring this to you at this committee meeting separate and apart from the next committee meeting where the audits will be presented, just so that we could get over what might be the shock factor as to what happened to our net position. So we pulled this out as a separate presentation, because it is pretty dramatic, as the depiction shows in the sample financial statements that you have. Our audit is, the field work is done, the review is within a week or so of being completed, but obviously we had a timing issue that we couldn't make this meeting, so we'll make the next meeting. As your agenda item states, you know, what is GASB 68? A standard for preparing financial statements, not for funding pension obligations. So how does that get funded? You know, we're all aware of the General Assembly's interest in this funding obligation as it relates to some statutory requirements and others. The retirement systems are getting very vocal about what needs to be done. So in terms of an unfunded liability, I think you know Jim Cummings, our chief financial officer. He's going to jump in when I feel inadequate to cover this topic. But if you look on page 5 of, I believe, your agenda materials, where it says statement of changes in net position.
Page 5.
Down at the bottom, you'll see the last line on page 5. It says cumulative effect of GASB 68, over $400 million. So my interpretation of that $400 million is that if we shut down right now and had to pay, the in terms of the Commonwealth of Kentucky, and had to pay everything that's owed and earned, retired and to be retired, if everybody was retired now, our share of the unfunded liability would be approximately $400 million. Did I state that correctly, Jim?
You did.
Okay. Okay, so what you see on pages 5 and 6 is how does it affect our statement of changes in net position? And while you would normally expect a positive net position when you finish the year, I thought it might be a little stunning to say our net position is $48 million in the hole. But again, because we are required to show the unfunded liability in our share based on our employees currently. Now, the whole calculation of the unfunded retirement is outdated once you do the calculation. It's changing daily. So as complex as it was, and our director of accounting, and Benjamin Harmon, said he's been working on this for 3 years with other universities, with officials from the retirement systems. And when they calculated it, they looked at the liability, I believe, as of June 30, 2014. Because their audit is not done like ours is not done. So it is a snapshot. And then we have made some adjustments to that number based on activity that happened in fiscal year 15 where we know we paid in. So, again, it is it's really an estimate of our, quote-unquote, fair share of all the retirement systems of expected payout should it have to be paid at once. And obviously they're projecting over multiple years. But this is a one-time snapshot. Now, an important question that's come up, and I think it's addressed in the agenda item, will this impact our bond rating? And what we have just gone through a rating, and I'll get into that one next. But we just went through a rating, and the truth is that the rating agencies already knew about this, have already really factored it in. They're quite aware of the Commonwealth of Kentucky's ratings and any entity within the Commonwealth that participates in the Kentucky Employee Retirement System, the Kentucky Teachers Retirement System, the County Employee Retirement System. So the rating agencies really have already factored this into their whole assessment. And the most recent rating reports note that this is a concern for the Commonwealth of Kentucky, as well it is as for a handful of states that are in a similar situation with defined benefit programs. Jim, is there anything else that you'd add about these statements, the change in net position, and then it's followed by the statement of the change in net position and the statement on net position?
Just a couple of things that I might mention for clarification. It's important for us to know that that is not like most of our liabilities that appear on that statement of net assets. It's not something that we're going to be required to write a check to retirees for in the future. It is just our proportionate share of the obligations that are held by those retirement systems. So even though it appears as a liability, it's not something that we believe we'll have to pay. Our obligation is a statutory obligation to make contributions on behalf of future members of that retirement system. So it's more of an accounting and reporting requirement than it is a true debt obligation.
And is it fair to say that every state agency who is engaged with KTRS or KERS, Kentucky Teachers Retirement System, Kentucky Employees Retirement Systems, has the same accounting dynamic? University, some other state agency, public school districts, et cetera?
Yes, sir, that's correct. All those who participate in one of those defined benefit plans have the same requirement that we have. And the thing that Ann mentioned about bond rating agencies that's so unusual for them is they don't just rate Kentucky institutions, they rate institutions all over the nation. So in states like Kentucky, unfortunately, where the pension fund obligations aren't very well funded, then we as members have a larger liability to show. There are states for which those pension obligations are pretty well funded and the unfunded liabilities are small or non-existent, and in those cases, those state institutions have no liability to record. So it makes the comparing of our financial statements to those in other states not as easy to do. And I think rating agencies are going to have to take that into account.
Any questions?
Anybody? That's it. I think you had one other item that's not on our informational item agenda, but you wanted to briefly discuss.
Yes, as I indicated, we did proceed this week with refunding, or what I call refinancing, of an old debt. We refunded a majority of the 2006 Series A bonds, $5.9 million,
yes,
slightly higher than $5.9 million, a very positive outcome. Based on the Board of Regents' recommendation at a previous meeting, there was a threshold set that we not proceed with such an action unless we could guarantee that it was going to be 5% or more on our savings. And the savings came in at about 5.56. So we've got a great working relationship with our financial advisor in the Office of Financial Management. So we did proceed with this refunding of an old debt. The net present value savings is a little over $320,000. I think it'll end up being somewhere in the $30,000 to $40,000 range on an annual basis that we'll save. We did have four bidders in this process, and the true interest costs ranged from 2.29, rounding them off, to about 2.56. So you can see how favorable action this was for us. That's a quick overview. We're required to report back to the board in a more formal manner, and we will bring an information item back to the board in October.
The bonds did sell, am I correct?
Absolutely.
Okay, all right.
Wells Fargo Bank.
It's in Byron.
Bought them.
Any questions? Let me make one comment to what you said. There are other state agencies, such as the Administrative Office of the Courts, that set benchmarks for savings on refundings. And their benchmarks started anywhere from 4% to 4.5% up to 5%. So when you arrange to get 5.5%, you're well over what some of the other agencies in the Commonwealth do. It's well worth the effort.
Well, this is a great working relationship with our financial advisor, but obviously this will be one of those ongoing responsibilities for the Debt Management Advisory Committee.
Mm-hmm.
That whenever we have an opportunity to do this, but if you look at our debt, we have been aggressive in taking advantage of these opportunities.
Any
Mr. Chair,
questions?
That's the end of my report.
Okay. Any questions? Any comments from anybody? All right, the last item is addressing what the chair asked me to address, and that was the status of the compensation review, Mr. Chairman. This will be brief. I had a great opportunity to meet with the Senate chair and vice chair, as well as the chair of the staff council on August 28th. It was a free-flowing meeting of ideas and concerns and suggestions. It was very candid, but I will say it was extremely positive and is, in my judgment, a good first step. Since that time, one of the thought processes, I won't say necessarily a recommendation, was meetings, more meetings with the President and the Senate, especially addressing some of these issues. And I understand in September that, in fact, that at least one of those meetings did occur, and I encourage and hope that they continue to occur. Since that time, I've received two things. The first is a list of other individuals who may very well want to meet on a one-on-one basis, and I'll attempt to arrange those meetings as appropriate. Unfortunately, Mr. Chairman, this has been a bad month trying to get things done from my professional side. And the other is that yesterday from the Senate chair, I received a copy of a faculty survey, which I have passed out to members of the committee and certainly to yourself. I got it last evening. I've had a few minutes to go through it very quickly, but not study it. And I think that will also help form the basis of what we do and how we go forward and review. So that's kind of a quick snapshot of where I think we are. I don't know if anybody else, John or Barbara, David, have any other comments.
The only comment I would make is that I think the faculty were extremely appreciative, Gil, of the fact that you met with that group and were very open to hearing your ideas.
I am, and I think that's true of the whole board. I mean, I don't think it's just me.
Okay. It also includes staff.
Oh, I'm sorry. It did. I'm sorry, Tamley. It included staff, too. Go ahead, Tamley. You were going to say?
I was going to echo Dr. Birch that the staff were very appreciative of meeting with you and we are as well gathering, as I mentioned earlier, more data and information to provide to you as well.
Okay.
On this.
Yeah, you told that to me earlier. I apologize. I should have said something that I did.
On behalf of the Board of Regents, thank you, Gil, for taking this task on and excelling.
Well, you threatened me, didn't you?
Not hard. Maybe that wouldn't work.
But if there are no other comments, then that concludes the Finance Committee's agenda. And I will relinquish back to you.
Thank you, sir.